So, again, let me tell you where we are. So I think of trying to start many classes with this picture. So overall, we will have three types of knots. We've only discussed usual knots so far, U knots. We still have to talk about V and W knots. We've done topology, again, we've done very little of topology, but we've mentioned what they are topologically. We're talking about combinatorics. We're going to switch to low algebra today, or we're going to move on to the associated low algebra today. We're yet to talk about high algebra, but probably before that, I will sort of do a brief detour and say a little bit about physics, though it's hardly really physics. It's sort of a piece of physics that sort of maybe fits really in between the low and the high algebra, and for now exists mostly for the U column and not the rest. So it's not quite within the grid. Anyway, so again, let me remind you where we are and one further reminder, tomorrow a talk by Jonathan Hillman. The title is something like Embeddings of Three Manifolds in Four Space, and it's at this at 1 p.m. at the seminar room on in the Euron building. Okay, so again, let me remind you where we were. So we have the space of knots, always called K. Okay, maybe with superscript or subscripts to distinguish which class, but at the moment it's just K. This led us to consider the space of finite type invariants, always called V. This led us to think about the highest derivatives of finite type invariants, always called W. Again, possibly with superscript or subscript, depending on where we are. W is always the dual of some space A, and A is the space of core diagrams, maybe along a line, maybe on a circle, depending on my mood, modulo 40 relations. And since knots can be added, and knots, so can you can multiply knots by taking their connect sum, and you can multiply finite type invariants pointwise, it follows, or it suggests that A should be an algebra and a coalgebra, and indeed it is. So A is a commutative, co-commutative, graded, connected, well, let me leave only the graded here, by algebra. Okay? So that's where we are right now. Okay? And what I want to do today is to tell you how A is related to Lie algebras. And the first step is to switch to a slightly different pictorial presentation of A, which makes the relationship with Lie algebras a bit clearer. Okay? So, definition. Well, first of all, temporarily, let's call rename A up C for A made out of chords. And so therefore this is A up C as well. Okay? And now I will define another space, A up T, for trivalent graphs. Okay? And A up T later will be shown to be isomorphic to A up C, and once they're isomorphic, I can drop the superscripts and just call both of them A back again. Okay, so this distinction is only for the purpose of this class, or for the purpose of next half hour or so. Okay, so what's A up T? A of t, well, just like A, again, I'm using set notation, but I should be using linear time notation. So just like A, it is the set spanned by a certain class of diagrams. And again, there is a choice whether you want to make the diagrams with skeleton a circle or a skeleton a line. And the difference is that we can have chords just as before, but the difference is that now we're also allowed to have trivalent vertices in the interior. Okay? So there can also be trivalent vertices like this, and in fact there can be more than one, and some of the chords, which now probably should be called edges, because they're no longer chords of a circle, so could be completely internal, and you know, you could even have completely internal loops of made out of chords. Okay, things like that. Okay? With a little bit of further information. And the little bit of further information is that every internal vertex should be oriented. Oriented means that you specify a cyclic ordering of the three edges emanating from it. Okay? So you specify a direction, say this direction, or you know, let's go all the way around. So say this direction means that you took the cyclic ordering 1, 2, 3. Okay? If I specify the opposite direction, meaning it means that I take the ordering 1, 2, 3 going clockwise. Okay? And my convention will be that if the order is not specified, it's counterclockwise. Okay? So over as drawn in the plane. The diagrams are abstract. Okay, the diagrams are combinatorial gadgets. They're not embedded in the plane. Okay, so if you think of them as combinatorial gadgets, you have to put an orientation for each vertex. Okay, but when you draw them in the plane, my convention will be to always draw them so that the orientation is the counterclockwise orientation. Okay. So, to summarize, these diagrams have two types of vertices, or two types of edges, and usually I will not bother to distinguish between the two types because it will be obvious. The edges that belong to the skeleton, which will be drawn outside, and the edges, and the other edges, which will be drawn inside. But you know, strictly speaking, I should be using a different color for the skeleton, or maybe use dashed lines and dotted lines, or some other convention. But anyway, two types of edges, two types of edges. And the two types are white and red or pink or whatever it is. The pink edges, or the skeleton, you know what, let's give them a name. So the skeleton edges, if you delete all the white edges, the skeleton edges make a circle, or in the long version, make a line. Okay? Two types of vertices, two types of vertices, and the two types of vertices are vertices in which a piece of the skeleton, I should say that the skeleton is directed. So the red vertices have an orientation, the red edges have an orientation, and again my convention will be that the orientation is counterclockwise unless otherwise specified. Two types of vertices, a vertex in which a white edge ends on a red edge, and a vertex in which three white edges meet, and these edges must, these vertices must be oriented, okay? And again, an orientation is one of two possibilities, either cyclic, or, so always cyclic, and it's always a cyclic ordering of the edges emanating from the vertex, and it, there are always two possibilities. And and one last word is that it must be connected. Okay? So I didn't say it before, but it must be connected. So you cannot have a disconnected component sitting here made out of white vertices. Okay? A few more comments. So first of all, in this picture there are also quadrivalent vertices. These are not real vertices. These are just because they're projected to the plane. They're not honest vertices. And a second comment is that these things are graded. So they are graded by half, or in other words, the degree of a diagram is half the total number of vertices. Okay? So over here I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 skeleton vertices plus 1, 2, 3, 4 internal vertices. So I have a total of 12 vertices, meaning the degree of this diagram is equal to 6. So this diagram has degree equal to 6. Okay? Anyway, well, so this is not yet A up T. This is still just the diagrams. Now I have to tell you what relations to mod out by. Okay? So the first relation is the anti-symmetry of the vertex. And it says that if you take any vertex and flip its orientation, you get a minus sign. Or said differently, if you have a vertex somewhere inside and you add to it the same vertex oriented the other way, right, with my convention of drawing, of orienting counterclockwise, this just means the same vertex oriented the other way, then this is equal to zero. Okay? Second relation. So the second relation is perhaps the most important relation, and it's the STU relation, and it says that if you have a Y lying on top of the skeleton, okay, so whenever you see a local picture like this, sort of a vertex lying on top of the skeleton, you can replace it by either just opening, well, either by this local picture or by that local picture. Okay? And then there is another relation which in fact follows from the other two, but it is so fundamental, and in some other circumstances it doesn't follow, in sort of related circumstances it doesn't follow. So I'd like to put it up here, again, even though it in principle follows from the other ones. And it's the so-called IHX relation, and it says that if you have an I inside the diagram, then you can replace it by an H minus an X. Okay? Hence the name IHX. So again, all of this means the, in the usual, not the usual sense of this class. So it means that this is a tiny part of a bigger diagram, and the bigger diagram is the same in all three places. Okay? So the reason for the naming IHX is obvious. The reason for the naming STU is silly and a little bit less obvious, and it is because in quantum field theory, when you write Feynman diagrams, this is the diagram for I guess it depends where which direction does time flow, but this is this is so-called S-channel scattering. This is so-called T-channel scattering, and this is so-called U-channel scattering. And but since it's much more lovely to call this IH and X, then ST and U became the name for this. Okay? Again, it's completely silly, but it's just a name. Okay? Now, there is an obvious map. You know what? Even before describing the obvious map, let me tell you another fact about A up T, and which also will sort of illustrate how to use these relations sometimes. Okay? So claim, A up T of the round skeleton, so often I will put parentheses, so often this notation will mean when I want to indicate the skeleton, I will just add it in parentheses this way. So A up T of the round skeleton is isomorphic to A up T of the long skeleton. Okay? Proof. Well, it's in some sense the exact same proof that we did when we were talking about A up C and the same statement. Okay? So the map from long skeleton to round skeleton is obvious. If you have a diagram on a long skeleton, you just close it, you get a diagram on a round skeleton. The map going from round skeleton to long skeleton is you want it to be the map where you cut open a diagram. But if you cut open a diagram, so you know, here is a certain diagram. Let's make it a little bit more complicated. If you cut it open here instead of where I did cut it, the effect is to move this end from here to here. So you need to show that modulo the relations, moving the end from here to here, is the do-nothing operation. So let's disconnect this end altogether. Okay? And now I need to show that reconnecting the end to here or to here is the same thing. Proof. Same proof as before. Okay? So, except a tiny bit more complicated. So, put little hooks, let's put the little hooks pointing, well, near the vertices, but always so as to make a counterclockwise sort of rotation symbol. I don't know. Okay? So, the little hooks go this way, everywhere. Sorry. I guess you could do it here as well, even though it's a bit pointless. Okay. So, anybody remembers the flag of the island of Man? What? The island of Man, it's a sort of independent British protectorate or something like that, somewhere between Ireland and Scotland, something like that. Anyway, I think it has vaguely the same shape. If this was, you know, if that was Valency 4, it would be nearly a swastika. But I think with Valency 3, it's nearly the island of Man. I could be wrong, but anyway. So, and again, sum over all ways of connecting the arrow to the hooks, with the convention that if the arrow connects to the skeleton from the wrong way, it just means that it connects to the skeleton from the right way with a minus sign. Okay? Alternatively, you could have just from the beginning declare that the skeleton vertices are also oriented. And that would be the opposite orientation. Anyway, so again, sum all the ways of connecting the loose end to the hooks. Okay? And then it's a matter of inspecting, and then again, write this sum in two ways. So one way will be to sum of the triples of hooks that are near the vertices. Around each vertex there is a triple of hooks, and it's quite clear that if you connect the arrow to the three hooks near a skeleton vertex, you get precisely the STU relation. Okay, so you get, you know, if you connect to the top, you get the Y diagram. If you connect to the left, you get this diagram. If you connect to the right, you get that diagram. So the skeleton summons vanish. It's a little less obvious, but something that you can check, that if you connect the loose end to the three hooks near an internal vertex, you get an IHX relation. So this is zero. Modulo, so these summons are also zero, so the overall sum is zero. But equally well, you could have summed over edges, okay? And if you sum by edges, then on most edges there are two hooks. The edges that have two hooks on them, so say a skeleton edge with two hooks, well, the two summons cancel because of my sign convention. If you have an internal edge with two hooks on it, again, it cancels because of the anti-symmetry relation. And the only thing left is the edges with one hook on them. And if you connect the loose end to this edge, you get zero. And these are the two things whose equality we wanted to show. So QED. Okay? So I suppose so it's exactly the same story of us before, but sort of the moral is that there is an alternative view for these relations, and the alternative view for these relations is that let's put it here. The alternative view is, well, for this relation, it's that this sum is equal to zero, so the sum of all ways of connecting the arrow to the hooks is equal to zero. And the alternative view for the IHX relation is that if you take it's the same thing, but for an internal vertex. Okay? Okay. Anyway, now the main claim. So, theorem, proposition, I don't know what to call it. Okay. There is an obvious map from diagrams, from core diagrams, into trivalent diagrams. The map just maps in fact, it's an inclusion. Okay, so the map just maps every core diagram to itself. Okay, I said you, in this case, I said you could have internal vertices, but you don't have to. Okay? So the proposition is that this map descends. So if you mod out by the relations, it remains well-defined, and it descends to an isomorphism going from A up C into A up T, and I don't know, let's call this isomorphism iota just for now, But from now on, it will never be mentioned again, because I'll just replace both of these spaces by the old name, calligraphic A, or ordinary calligraphic A with no superscripts. Anyway, proof. Proof. Well, first of all, I have to show that this map indeed descends. That this map indeed descends. So I need to show that relations here get mapped to relations here or to zero. Okay, so that it's well defined modulo the relations. Okay, so. In other words, I need to show that the 40 relation written here, the only relation that you impose here is the 40 relation. I need to show that the 40 relation is a consequence of the relations here. But that's easy. Consider this diagram. No, I may be too big. Consider this diagram. Is it still visible? At this size? Okay, so consider this diagram, and as usual, I really mean that you could add more chords to it if you wish. Okay, so I mean there could be more chords here, or anywhere, or you know, going this way. Okay, but I'm highlighting the part that I care about, and apply to it STU in two different ways. So first of all, use STU around this edge, right? So this edge is a Y figure lying on the skeleton. So by the STU relation, it's equal to this minus that. Okay? And then apply to it the STU relation in this direction. So you'll have to look this way so that it works. And then again, the result is this minus that. Okay? And the moral is that two STU relations imply a 4T relation. And therefore, well, the 4T relation here is a sum of STU relations, meaning the map descends to the quotient. So iota is defined. Okay, so this is part one. Part two, iota is onto. But we've essentially already said that. Well, I want to show that whenever you have a diagram with a internal vertices, I don't know, here is one, okay? I want to show that it's in the image of iota, meaning that it can be written using a diagram with chords only, okay? So remember that I have the condition. Well, okay, sorry. So if this diagram has no internal vertices, it's in the image of iota. Okay, it's iota of itself. Okay? So suppose it does have internal vertices. And now remember that my diagrams are connected. Okay? So there must be an internal vertices, you know, there may be internal vertices like this one, which is fully internal, and anything that it connects to is also internal. But there must be an internal vertex that connects to the skeleton. Okay? So there must be an internal vertex that connects to the skeleton, say this one. Apply STU along this internal vertex, and you have and you've replaced your diagram by a sum of two diagrams with one internal vertex less. Okay, so by induction, the map is onto. Okay, So iota is on 2. And point 3 is, well, I kind of defined the inverse of iota in doing part 2. Okay? The inverse is, well, you get a diagram like this. Okay, you get a diagram in dt, so with prevalent vertices, you pick an internal vertex and you apply a skew to it, and then you do it repeatedly until you get to a sum of core diagrams, and that would be your image in the abscene. So I kind of defined the inverse of iota. So iota inverse sort of defined already, but the claim is that it's not just sort of defined, that it's actually well defined. Is well defined. In other words, that iota inverse is independent of the choices made during its construction. Okay? So iota inverse is, it doesn't matter in which order you choose the you choose to get rid of the internal vertices. Okay? So that's the claim. And the proof is by induction on the number of internal vertices. Okay? So if D has zero internal vertices, then iota inverse of D is D itself, and that's clearly well defined. Okay? If D has one internal vertex, well, if D has one internal vertex, then it looks like this, with possibly more nonsense. Okay? More chords. And then I have to show that the three ways of applying STU to get rid of the internal vertex are the same. So I have to show in particular that if I use STU in this direction, or if I use this STU in this direction, I get two things which are the same. So I don't know, I need to show that the thing that you get here, I need to show that A is equal to B in the target space of iota inverse, meaning in A up C. But we've already done this. That's the 4T relation. Okay? But that's 4T. Okay? So now I'm assuming that iota inverse is well defined with diagrams that have lots of a certain number of internal vertices. And suppose I have a diagram with one more. Okay? So now I have a diagram like this. Okay? There are, in this diagram, there are two different ways of starting the procedure. Okay? So, I mean, I could either apply iota inverse here first, or I could apply iota inverse here, sorry, either I could apply STU here first or here first. And I need to show that the two ways of defining iota inverse are the same. Okay? But, well, suppose you go in this direction first, you get a picture that looks like this. Here, this became this. And the right hand side, the other part remains unchanged, minus this with this unchanged. Okay? And here you will be getting the left is unchanged and the right is resolved this way, or the left is unchanged and the right is resolved this way. Okay? So I need to show that that this is the same as that, or rather, that if I continue the process here, I'll get the same as what I get when I continue the process here. But now I'm with one internal vertex less, and I already know that the process is well defined, so it doesn't matter which internal vertex I resolve next. So over here, I will resolve next this internal vertex. And over here, I will resolve next this internal vertex. Okay? So this will become a sum of four possibilities in which both sides got resolved, and, well, plus other choices. And this will also become a sum of four possibilities in which both sides get resolved. And it's the exact same sign. Sum. Sorry. Okay? So, well, we're not done yet. It's a little bit more complicated than that. So this was the case where my two choices for the first... So I wanted to compare... Well, I wanted to... When defining iota inverse, I wanted to switch from resolving one edge first to resolving another edge first. Okay? But what if these two edges were connected to the same vertex? This was the case in which they're connected to different vertices. What if they're connected to the same vertex? Okay? So there is another possibility, and it's a possibility like this, where the two vertices, the two edges, one and two, on which I want to apply STO, connect to the same vertex. Okay. This possibility has a subcase. The subcase is if there is another vertex somewhere, okay, that connects to the skeleton. If there is another vertex, three, somewhere, that connects to the skeleton, then just use the transitivity of equality. So doing one first is equal to doing three first by the previous case, and doing three first is equivalent to doing two first by the previous case. So therefore, we don't need to worry about this case. So we may have more chords, but we may not have further vertices connected to the skeleton. Okay. So no other vertices connected to the skeleton. We still have two possibilities. Possibility one is that this connects directly to the skeleton. Okay? But this is exactly the case that we dealt with over here. So this is done. And then there is one remaining annoying case, and the remaining annoying case is that sort of whatever this connects to stays in itself, you know, is sort of looks like a bubble which doesn't connect to the skeleton. Okay? So I still have to show that the two ways of resolving this are the same. Okay? Well, what I'll do is I'll just show that any way of resolving this is equal to zero. Okay? And then, in particular, the two ways are the same. Okay? So, let's resolve it in the direction of one first. So, we'll get... we'll get, you know, the bubble and the line going from here to here, minus, and possibly more stuff, minus the bubble going here and a line going from here to here. Okay? Now, so again, the bubble could be more complicated, could have internal structure. Okay, and there may be more stuff lying around. Okay? Now, in both cases, the next step will be to collapse the bubble towards the boundary using STUs. And the bubble is the same in both cases. So I'll get a picture, well, like here I'll get a picture where the bubble gets collapsed to the boundary, and this chord gets copied and everything else gets copied. So what I mean by this is the mess that will be created when the bubble collapses to the boundary. And this mess is really a big linear combination of things. It's not a single individual diagram. Okay, but it's still a localized mess. Localized around the place where the bubble used to connect to the boundary, because everything falls to that direction. Okay? Minus the exact same thing, except this chord, let's call it alpha, I don't know, goes to the other direction of the mess. Okay? And then the rest remains as before. But this mess and this mess are the same because they came from collapsing the same bubble according to the same rules. Okay? But now, moving the end of alpha from one side of a mess to the other side of a mess is equal to 0 mod 4t by an argument that we've already done. So, this is equal to 0. Okay, so this was collapsing in the direction of 1 is 0. Collapsing in the direction of 2 is also 0 for the same reason, and therefore the two things are the same. Are you with me? Okay. And I guess I should have said, and so far I haven't used SIHX at all, right? And in fact I told you I will not use IHX because I told you it is implied by the previous two. So let me make it official. Claim, let's put it here, claim STU implies IHX. Proof. So suppose I had an IHX somewhere. Okay, so I have a big diagram. You know what, let's use a linear skeleton now. So the skeleton is at the bottom. I have an IHX somewhere floating. Okay, it connects, because the diagram is connected, the IHX connects to the skeleton somehow. Okay, so here is the I. There will also be a diagram here with an H and whatever, okay? But you may as well, first of all, apply STUs so as to get rid of all the vertices that lie in between the leg of the eye to the skeleton. Choose one leg of the eye and it gets connected to the skeleton somehow. And use STU to get rid of all the vertices that lie in between that edge and the skeleton. Okay? So, you may as well assume that the eye has its leg directly on the skeleton. Okay? So, I need to show that this diagram is equal to the diagram that you will get by replacing the I by an H or by an X. Okay? So, let's do it uglily first. Uglily, I think, is not an English word. I think we had this discussion before, haven't we? Is uglily an English word? I don't know. Let's do it uglily first, and then prettily later. So first of all, uglily, you know, you apply STU here, you get a sum of two diagrams. In each of these diagrams, you have a further internal vertex, which is now connected to the skeleton. You apply STU again, so the two diagrams become four. Okay? Likewise, Here, you apply a steel, you get two diagrams, you apply a steel again, you get four. And likewise here, you apply a steel, you get two, and then you get four. Overall, we have 12 diagrams, all coming with signs and just signs, I guess. And you just draw all of them. It takes 5 minutes of uninspiring work. And the 12 arrange themselves in six pairs with opposite signs, and therefore this goes to zero. That's the ugly proof. Okay? Let's do it a little bit nicer. Okay? So here is the nicer way. Well, I'll give you a partial dictionary that relates some diagrams of this kind with certain expressions in non-commutative associative algebras. Okay? So basically, I will, if I'll have a picture like this, or maybe even more complicated, E, F, G, I'll just interpret it as a word in the free algebra, free associative algebra generated by the symbols A, C, D, where is B? I skipped D, I don't know why. A, C, D, E, F, and G. Okay? And the word will be, well, you just read what you see. So first you see A, then you see, well, I'll interpret this as the commutator. So then I'll see the commutator of C and D, and let me tell you on the side that the commutator of X and Y is X times Y minus Y times X. Okay? And then I see here, well, going to the left I see an E, going to the right I see the commutator of F and G, so it's F commutator G. Okay? So this defined a map from a certain sort of collection of forests. Okay, so I have trees planted along the line, so that's a forest. Two, certain expressions inside the free associative algebra. Okay? This map respects the STU relation. Okay? Indeed, the STU relation under this map becomes, well, AB is equal to AB and then minus AB, well, this will get mapped to A bracket B. This will get mapped to A times B. And this will get mapped to, well, first you see B and then A, so B times A. So the STU relation becomes the definition of the bracket. Okay? So maybe I should add here, this is the definition of the bracket. Okay? And so let's see what happens from IHX. So where does IHX go? So, well, let's just, in fact, I can use the figure I already have and just label everything. So A, B, C, A, B, C, A, B, C. Okay? And now, let's see. Over here I have on the left, when I look from the root, go up, look to the left, I see the bracket of A and B. So on the left I have A and B. On the right I have C. Okay? This one, well, I look, I start from the root, go up, look at the left, I see A. and go to the right, and I see on the left B and on the right C, so the bracket of B and C, right? And over here, I start from the root, look to the left, I see B, look to the right, I see on the left A and on the right B, so the bracket of A and C, okay? And now I'm claiming that this is equal to this minus that, and with luck, this should be the Jacobi identity. So the Jacobi identity is an algebraic identity satisfied by brackets. Okay? If you just open the brackets, it just follows. Okay, so in fact, it's the same proof as before, I only labeled it differently so that I could call it the Jacobi identity. Anyway, is this the Jacobi identity? Anybody remembers what the Jacobi identity is? You know what, I'll tell you what the Jacobi identity is, and then with luck, it will be this. So the Jacobi identity says that if you look at the bracket of x with y and z, and then add the cyclic permutations of the letters to this, so you sort of replace this expression by the expression you get by cyclically permuting y and z, x, y, and z, then you get zero. So the Jacobi identity says that this plus y with z and x plus z with x and y is equal to zero. Is this the same as that? So, I don't know, it better be. So, you know what, let's check it. Let's replace the equality by a minus sign, and then this becomes a plus sign. We need to show that this minus this plus that is equal to zero. Okay? Now, here we have A, B, and C in cyclic order, but with the bracket on the left instead of on the right. Right here I wanted all the brackets to be on the right. So if I wanted to bring the bracket to the right, I'd have to use the anti-symmetry of the bracket. So this is the corresponding term over there with a minus sign. This is, the three are in cyclic order, and everything is all right, but I have the minus coming from here, and here I have B, A, C. This is not cyclic order. So to bring it to cyclic order, I have to flip C and A, and then I'll get the right term over there, and then I get an extra minus sign. So all terms are the same as the terms over there, but with minus signs. Okay? So that's the Jacobi identity indeed. What time is it? It's 10:05. Let's take a break until 10:15.